Her head turns to the sound. When she sees Rocky, her whole face seems to light up like somebody flicked a switch in her head. "Mrs. Capone," Piper says, apparently forgetting she isn't supposed to know her name, "let me introduce you to baby Rocky." Mrs. Capone ignores Piper. She's already on her way to Teresa, who is struggling with the howling infant, while Jimmy hops on one foot, singing Farmer in the Dell. Mrs. Capone is standing right next to Teresa now.
"Oh, baby,"
she coos to Rocky. Then she taps Teresa lightly on the sleeve.
"Me?"
she offers. Teresa has been so busy with Rocky, she hasn't figured out this is Al's mom. She happily hands Rocky over to Mrs. Capone. Jimmy hesitates. He seems unable to decide what to do. Mrs. Capone takes Rocky in her arms and rocks him gentle and wide like a large cradle. Almost immediately, as if by some spell, Rocky stops crying. Mrs. Capone keeps rocking, her smile broad and sweet.
"Mrs. Capone!"
Piper won't give up. But Mrs. Capone ignores Piper and everyone else. She's busy singing a soft, sweet lullaby in what I'm guessing is Italian. As far as she's concerned, there's no one else on the boat but that black, curly-haired baby. She sings to him all the way to Alcatraz. When the boat docks, baby Rocky is asleep. Mrs. Capone sighs. She hands the peacefully sleeping infant back to Teresa Madaman. Then the light in her face goes dark, and she gathers herself together and walks slowly forward. Officer Johnson meets her and speaks with her for a moment, though Mrs. Capone's blank look makes me wonder if she understands any English at all. Then he leads her through the metal detector snitch box, which blares its sharp alarm bell.
"Oh,"
Teresa cries.
"For crying out loud," Jimmy whistles.
"The old lady's got a piece. She's going to break him out,"
Piper cries, her mouth hanging open in complete surprise.
"Oh my God, Rocky, are you all right?"
Teresa holds him close.
"What were you thinking, giving him to her?"
Jimmy hollers at Teresa. Mrs. Capone says something. I can't understand the Italian words, but it seems like she's begging him not to do something. Officer Johnson's billy club is out. He points for her to follow. Officer Johnson and now Officer Trixel escort her to a small storage room under the dock. Other guards press close, and Officer Bomini, up in the tower, trains his Thompson on Mrs. Capone. A minute later, Officer Johnson comes out.
"Jimmy, your mom speaks Italian. Run, get her, fast!"
When Teresa hears this, she scoots up the hill with Rocky. She's just out of sight when Mrs. Madaman comes down the stairs, wearing shoes but no stockings, a hat but no sweater. She half runs down the stairs to the dock and disappears inside the storeroom. We wait, hanging around as close as the three guards will let us. When Officer Johnson and Mrs. Capone finally come out, she's all messy-looking, like she dressed in a hurry. Her eyes are cast down. Mrs. Madaman speaks Italian to her. Her voice is kind. Mrs. Capone shakes her head. She won't look up. Instead of getting into the waiting truck to go up the hill to the cell house, Mrs. Capone gets back on the boat. Later, we learn that Mrs. Capone had been strip-searched to find her weapons. There were none. The metal stays on her old-fashioned corset set the snitch box off. And, try as she might, Mrs. Madaman could not convince the terrified Mrs. Capone that this humiliation was the last. I can't get over this. I keep thinking about when Al Capone was a baby. I'll bet his mama sang him the same song she sang to Rocky. I'll bet she held his hand when they crossed the street, packed his lunch for school, and sewed his name in his jacket, A. Capone, so everyone would know it was his. I'll bet she wishes she could do it all over again, too.
If only Al were little, and she could. 23. She's not cute. Tuesday, April 2nd, 1935. In English class, Miss Bimp pairs Scout and me together for a journalism project. And just like that, we're friends again. We start talking about who we think will win the World Series this year. And the next thing I know, he's put a game together at lunch. He doesn't make a big deal out of it, neither do I. If it weren't for the fact that my throwing arm is rusty and my timing stinks, I would be happy. But what do I expect? All I've done for the past 2 months is bowl. Then, on the way back to class, Scout says, I'll trade you my extra glove for one of those convict baseballs. You find one of them yet? Not exactly. Piper said they just come sailing over the wall. He does a whistling imitation of a ball in flight. She made it sound like everyone on Alcatraz has one. When you talk to Piper anyway? I ask as I stop to tie my shoes. Scout waits for me. Sometimes we talk in French class. How come you don't want to look for one?
I don't know.
I heave my book bag over my shoulder and walk on. She said maybe she could get me one. Maybe, Scout says. I stop and stare at him. How come you're so friendly with her all of a sudden? He shrugs. Kinda cute, don't you think?
No,
I say. Scout doesn't say anything. He throws his glove in the air and catches it. She's not cute, I glare at him.
Fine, fine, she's not cute. What are you so ticked off about anyway? I'm the one who's supposed to be sore, you know.
I kick at the grass. I don't blame you for being burnt up.
Piper said your sister's different. She said nobody ever watches her but you.
He looks quick at me and then away. I shrug.
Look, I'd just like to have one of those baseballs, he says.
They look just like any other baseball.
Oh, so you do have one.
No, I don't. This comes out louder than I mean it to. I've seen Jimmy's, that's all.
Well, if they're laying around, I thought you could pick one up for me. You know, if we're friends.
Of course we're friends, I say. Sure, I'll find you one. I smile at him. In history class, my teacher, Mr. Berger, begins discussing the Louisiana Purchase, and I sit and stew. It's not Scout I'm thinking about, though. It's Scout and Piper. Do they sit next to each other in French class? How come I haven't heard about this before? I knew they were friendly, but I didn't know they were that friendly. I think about this through history and all of math class. I think about it all the way home. When my mother leaves, I unroll the sleeves of my shirt, button them at the cuffs, and I grab Natalie's jacket. There's poison oak on this island, and I don't want us to get it. Okay, Nat, let's go. I open the door, all business today. I head up the stairs, Nat scuffing along behind me, pulling at her sweater like her shirt sleeve is caught up inside. Hey, Nat, I say, doubling back so I'm walking next to her. As soon as I do, she stops dead in her tracks and refuses to move forward until I go first. Nat is a single-file girl. What do you think of Mrs. Kelly? I ask. I'm walking around to the windy west side of the island now, craning my neck back to hear what she says. 9868, Natalie answers. 9868? What does that mean? Oh, yes, that's Mrs. Kelly's address. Yes, exactly, 9868.
No buttons, missy,
Natalie says. I look down at the water. There are almost waves today, like the bay is trying very hard to be the ocean. Right, I know, she won't let you play with your buttons. But there's something odd about the way Nat says no buttons.
No buttons, missy.
Natalie tries again, and this time I hear it. She's doing an imitation of the way Mrs. Kelly talks.
Natalie has made a joke. It's the funniest thing I've ever heard. For a second, I think I see Natalie smile too. Or maybe I've just imagined it. It's that quick. I want to grab Natalie, hold her here with me, keep her from going down again. I just love talking to her this way. And then the thought occurs to me, is Mrs. Kelly helping? So, Nat, I say, like I would to a normal sister, what would you think about two people who talk all the time in French class?
Two people talk, she says.
Yeah, exactly. She stops and looks at me, right at me. Then it's almost as if she shrugs. Okay, so I'm probably wrong, but I like thinking this, even if it's not true. Okay, Nat, I say, eyeing the rec yard wall through the chain-link fence and straight up the hill from us. We're looking for a baseball. I wait for the gulls to quiet down. You know, like mine, right? A line drive down the center. I smile. That's right. We look for the baseball in the bushes here. Natalie look for baseball? I say. Natalie looks up in the sky as if it's going to fall from there. Well, not exactly. You look down here. I poke around in the bushes, showing her what I want her to do. Natalie runs her tongue over her lip, as if this takes all the concentration she has. Okay, follow me. I shimmy up the steep hill sideways and begin picking through the thicket of bushes. I try to walk in a pattern. Natalie likes patterns. Maybe she'll follow along. But it's difficult to keep to it because the bushes are thick. I look up at the yard wall again. My dad said the baseball diamond is in this corner. I scramble on through the underbrush. Natalie isn't following. She's sitting down on the side of the hill with a pile of pebbles. She's setting them up, almost like an abacus. I wonder what she's doing. It seems complicated, but it looks like it's more fun than getting scratched by bushes looking for a baseball. Sometimes Natalie is saner than I am. I finish searching one patch, then look up at the chain-link fence that separates where I'm allowed to go from where I'm not. My eyes follow the chain-link all the way up to where it hits the cement yard wall. I can see the guard tower now, but I don't think the guard can see me. I look down at Natalie. She's totally absorbed in her stones. I don't want Piper to find a ball for Scout. I don't know why, but I don't. I renew my search, looking inside every bush, kicking aside the leaves underneath. I'm right up against the chain-link fence now. The rec yard wall is solid cement, maybe 16 feet high. But right where the chain link meets the cement wall, I see a gap. The hillside has crumbled away, leaving a space between the fence and the mountain. Is this new? Did the mountain erode in all the rain? My heart beats loud in my throat. I look down at Natalie. She hasn't moved a muscle. I won't be able to see her once I get up there, but I know better than to try to move her once she's all set up. I'll just make it quick, that's all. A couple of seconds to look. 1 minute, that will be enough. A ball could be sitting right there out in the open, just waiting for me. I know this is a lousy idea, but it doesn't matter. A gap in the fence is a magnet. It just is. 24. Like a regular sister. Same day, Tuesday, April 2nd. 1935. It takes me longer than I thought it would to get to the gap. The hill is steep and slippery with rocks and shale, land sliding down as I go up. But the guard can't see me here. A chink in the hill blocks his view. When I get to the hole in the fence, I wonder if I'll fit. The only way to tell if a ball is there is to look under the bushes, and I can't do that from over here. But what if I get stuck under the fence? What will I do? I wish I could see Natalie. I should just go back and forget about this. but then I spot a little glimmer of grayish-whitish something resting on a rock. A baseball? I search for a stick to poke under the fence to see if I can roll the ball my way. It's not close enough. Only way to find out is to go under. I sit down with a bump and stick my feet through. I scoot forward and get my knees under. This is taking too long. I have to check on Natalie. I lose my nerve and scoot back. But then I remember how hard it was getting up here. It'll take twice as long if I have to go back to see her and then climb the shale slide again. Didn't my mom say I should treat Natalie like a regular sister? I wouldn't go and check on a regular sister, that's for sure. I stick my legs under again. Now I'm up to my waist. The zigzag chain link at the bottom pokes into my belly, but I wiggle through. The only problem now is my big shoulders. Football shoulders, my Uncle Dean calls them. I wiggle, wiggle, inch, inch, turn my head, and curl under. Now I race for the ball, but I slow down as I get close. My throat gets tight. This is not a ball. It's just a piece of cardboard. I turn it over. The back says, Circle Janet T. Janet Trixel. It's a project from the kindergarten class. I'm so angry I want to tear the circle up, but I don't. I shove it in my pocket. Then I think of Natalie. Cut your losses, I hear my dad say. I'm going straight back to her. Only I just have to peek one or two more places. It kills me to have risked all of this for nothing. Piper will get a ball for Scout, and he'll think I didn't even try. Scout and Piper. Piper and Scout. But all I find is dirt, sticks, stones, leaves. Now I feel like a real chump. I scoot myself back under, scratching my hand on the fence. At least I don't get stuck, I tell myself, as the count bell rings. The little hairs along my spine stand up. I should never have left Natalie alone here. When it's really foggy, they don't let the cons work. Is it that foggy today? I slip-slide down the hillside as fast as I can, and there she is, her blonde-brown head bent over her rocks. She's sorting them. Of course she is. Everything is fine. I blow air out in a great big sigh. I'm standing by Natalie now. She doesn't look up. Hey, Nat. Everything okay here? You just been playing your game, right? 105, she says. 105? I ask, trying to catch my breath as the foghorns sound again. Is that how many rocks you have? Wow, that's a lot. I hope she doesn't plan on lugging 105 rocks home. I look closer. She has 30, maybe 40, nowhere near 105 of them. I look up at the birds. There are 15 or so. Still, a big flock could have landed here while I was up there. She could have counted 105 birds. Sure. Easy. Lots of birds, huh? 105. Wow, I say. She looks up from her rocks. I see by the slight motion of her head that she's counting the birds down by the water. Bad moose, she says. 13. 13 now, 105 before. They come and go, don't they, Natalie? 13. She's irritated now, like I'm being incredibly stupid. Natalie, count birds 13. All right, I say. 13.
25. My Gap. Wednesday, April 24th, 1935. Every day at school now I play baseball with Scout at lunch, and though he hasn't said anything else about the convict baseballs, I know he's thinking about it. I know because Piper tells me. She asks me if I'm going to get Scout a ball. She asks more than once. Both times I pretend I don't hear, but Natalie and I hunt every day. I draw diagrams of the arcs a ball might take from inside the prison wall to the free space outside. Nat and I look for 3 days straight near the northeast point by the water tower.
I feel like I work the place over with a pick and axe, but nothing. It's not like Nat really helps me, but she doesn't get in my way either. She sits and counts rocks or sticks or sometimes birds. I always make sure to park her right in the center of where I want to look so I can keep an eye on her. We're getting along, Nat and I. It's peaceful to spend time with her out here. Sometimes I even tell her stuff that's bothering me. I don't know if she understands, but she's quiet, like she hears. The other place I always go is the Gap. Last night I dreamt Scout found the Gap. It's my Gap. The thought of Scout worming his way through my hole and my fence and finding my ball makes me nuts. This afternoon, the teachers have a meeting, so we get out of school an hour early. I hope my mother doesn't know this, but when I get home, I see she does. She has an errand to run in the city. She's ready to leave, just like always. As soon as she's gone, I head straight for the Gap, with Natalie toe-stubbing along behind me. She's wearing a green dress with puffed sleeves and some kind of pucker stitching across the top. It's a dress a 10-year-old should wear. Natalie looks silly in it. She's too old. We cut through the parade grounds, where Annie, who had the day off from school, and Teresa are huddled over something. "Hey," Annie says, "where have you been? Want to toss a ball around?" "I can't now," I say. "Where are you going?" Teresa glances up from the card she's working on. "Machine Gun Kelly," it says. "Oh, you know, looking for a convict ball," I say. Annie's almost white eyebrows raise. "I thought you didn't care about that."
"Well, I don't. Didn't. But now I do. Just, you know, kind of," I say.
"For Piper?" Annie asks, the corner of her mouth twitching like she's fighting a smile.
"For me," I shoot back at her.
"You'll never find one over there, but go ahead," Annie says.
I look hard at her. "Where will I find one?"
"Beats me. All I know is the balls don't go over very often," Annie says.
"How'd you get one?" I ask.
"My dad got it for me."
"Is that how Piper got hers?"
"I don't know," Annie says. "Can I come?" Teresa asks. "I thought you wanted to finish," Annie says.
Teresa looks at me, then Annie. She chews her bottom lip.
"You can go if you want," Annie tells her.
Teresa shakes her head.
"We have to finish," she says. "If you feel like playing later,"
Annie nods to me. "Sure," I say, as Natalie and I head down the steps. Above us, 6 or 7 birds track her. I swear every bird on the island knows Natalie.
We stop near the greenhouse, below the southwest corner of the rec yard wall. We've got this down to a system, Natalie and I. In some ways, she is very predictable, more like a clock than a human being. I set her up with a big pile of rocks, and she's fine. It's a warm, clear spring day. I feel happy, as if I'm on the verge of something wonderful. No matter what Annie says, I'm going to find a baseball today. I even start whistling Take Me Out to the Ball Game. When we get to the spot by the west end, I notice the terraces. They are full of new pink, yellow, and bright purple garden flowers growing in neat rows. Across the water, I look to see how they're doing on the Golden Gate Bridge today. Progress is slow. It always looks the same. The Bay Bridge, too, though I can't see it from here. Natalie breaks her graham cracker sandwiches carefully along the dotted lines, eats half, and throws the other half to the birds. Then she gets busy gathering her stones. She's very diligent about this, like it's her job. I start up the hill. When I get to the gap in the fence, I kick more of the hill away first before I try to fit through. Why didn't I think of this before? Okay, I'm in. Let's be smart, Moose, I tell myself. I'll begin at one corner and search every square inch until I get to the other. Slowly, carefully, I look under each bush, marking my progress so I don't get confused about which bushes I've checked and which I haven't. "Take your time," I say out loud. "Keep your mind on business." For a while, everything goes okay, but then I start getting discouraged. No baseball. It's not fair. I'm doing everything right. I look again and again and again. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Maybe there just aren't any more balls out here, I think for the 100th time. Maybe this is all a big, fat waste of time. I scoot back under the fence, too fast this time, and rip the back of my shirt. Then I slide back down the shale to the halfway spot. A gull is pecking at the dirt, scouting for leftover graham cracker crumbs. 5 piles of stones are neatly sorted by size. But Natalie... Where's Natalie? 26. Convict Baseball. Same day, Wednesday, April 24th, 1935. Natalie, my mouth tries to say, but my throat is closed up tight. No sound comes out. I run down, my arms flying helter-skelter, the shale sliding. She has to be here. Maybe she's out scouting for more stones. That's it. I look down by the small rocky beach. A crab scuttles out from under a rock. Men on a nearby ferry are laughing. The sound is eerily loud, though the boat is far away. She isn't there. Over by the red berry bushes. No. Back by the greenhouse. No. Which way do I go? I stop and listen. A voice sounds behind me. I spin and run toward the voice. Natalie? I crash the thicket, and then I see her. Natalie sitting on a rock with someone. A man. He is wearing a denim shirt and denim pants. A con. Natalie is sitting with a con. The scream is stuck in my throat, choking me. Don't look away. Don't blink. Do not blink. The con is smiling. He's missing a front tooth. There are dark, greased comb marks in his hair. I wonder about this. Inmates aren't allowed hair pomade. Suddenly, this seems very important. Why is he wearing pomade on his hair? Maybe he isn't a con. Please, God, don't let him be a con. I haven't even looked at Natalie. I'm afraid to take my eyes off the guy in the denim shirt. I think somehow I can protect her this way. But now I watch her, too. She's smiling. Sometimes Nat looks concerned or sad or raging mad. The best she ever looks is interested. But here is my sister, Natalie Flanagan, looking happy. Hey, Moose! The con's voice is scratchy and an octave too high, like a girl's almost. You want this? He reaches inside the coat draped over his leg. He has a gun. I can't breathe. He's going to shoot. But then I see. Information seeps into my brain. It isn't a gun. It's a baseball. Suddenly my throat opens up. Get away! Get the heck away! Go! Go! That's my sister! Get away from her! I scream as the 4 o'clock count whistle blows. The con jumps, and Natalie's smile, like some kind of rare bird sighting, slips away. Take it easy, fella. I got your baseball, didn't I? The con says. He nods at me and turns to Natalie. Bye, sweetie. He closes Natalie's fingers around the baseball and fast walks away. Do not call her sweetie, I shout. His pace is uneven, like one leg is shorter than the other. Then I see the number stamped on the back of his denim shirt. 105. 27. Idiot. Same day, Wednesday, April 24th, 1935. Nothing happened. I say this out loud to shut up the voice in my head. My teeth are chattering like I'm cold. They were just sitting there. There's no law against that. But I can't stop thinking what the warden told me the first week we came here.
Some of these convicts haven't seen a woman in 10 or 15 years. I think you're old enough to understand what that means.
I was only gone 2 minutes. 3 minutes, maybe. No more. No more. Nothing happened. The words go round and round in my head like the wheels of a car rolling over the slats of a bridge. But it was more than 3 minutes. Way more. I left right after the 3 o'clock count whistle. I returned before the next. I was probably gone 45 minutes. No, I left way after the 3 o'clock whistle. It was only 10 minutes. No more. Calm down, I tell myself. Nothing happened. My mind flashes on the greasy-haired con holding my sister's hand, and a sick feeling comes over me. My mouth tastes like curdled milk. I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. I'm so upset I hardly see where I'm going. Natalie is pulling back, trying to go slow. I tug her along. I don't care what she wants. We're almost to the west stairs now, and I'm not even sure how we got here. It's like I dreamed the distance. How did he know my name? How did he know what I was looking for? He had that ball with him. He must have known before. 105. That was the number that didn't make sense. Idiot! I am an idiot! Natalie must have said something the last time. The last time we were over here. Could that be? He must have left before I saw him then. Probably meant to today. But he brought the ball. Insurance, I guess. Figured he could buy me off. I grip Natalie's arm so tight it feels as if I'm holding bone. She tries to twist her arm away, but I'm not about to let go. Ever. She balks, stops, refuses to be half-dragged when we both know she follows just fine without this. But I won't give her even this much freedom. What's the matter with you? Don't you know the first thing about anything? I scream. Come on! Can't you just walk with me for once? Almost there. Almost there. I'm going to cry, and I sure as heck don't want to do it out here. I pray Teresa isn't there waiting. I don't want to find her sitting outside our door. We turn the corner to our landing, and my chest falls. Someone is there. Piper. Oh, man, just what I need. Piper's hat is tipped to the side. She's watching me out of the corners of her eyes. You were chewing out Natalie. You were yelling at her, Piper says.
I wasn't.
Yes, you were. I heard you. You never yell at her. What's going on? She demands.
I keep my mouth shut and stare at the doorknob, wishing I could get Piper out of the way. Piper looks at Natalie. Natalie is rubbing her chin on her shoulder, faster than normal, as if she's upset too. Have I done this, or was it 105? She seemed happy with that greasy-haired con, so it was probably me. Sweet Jesus, Piper whistles one long note. You found a ball. That's one of ours, isn't it? She holds her hand out to Natalie. Natalie can be very possessive with her things. She would never give anyone a rock or a button. I think Piper will be in for a fight. But no. Natalie plops the ball in Piper's hand, easy as can be.
Where did you find it?
I don't look Piper in the face. I feel like I held my sister hostage for that stupid baseball. I won't touch it. It's dirty. The last thing in the world I want is to tell anyone how we got it.
and Piper is 10 times worse than just anyone. How could I have let this happen? 105, Natalie says. I say nothing. It feels like all the blood is draining out of my face. I'm lightheaded. Please, Piper, be as stupid as I was. Piper is frowning. She's trying to understand. Do not figure this out. Do not figure this out. 105 what? Piper asks. She pushes the brim of her hat back as if to see better. She is staring intently at Natalie. Natalie says nothing. Good, Natalie. We gotta go inside. I touch the door. It feels good, that door. I can almost hear the sound it will make when it slams shut. Come on! 105 what? Is that how many places you looked? What? Piper asks. She's standing firm between me and the door. Her hands are crossed in front of her, and the frilly blouse she wore to school is tucked inside her overalls. Even as upset as I am right now, some part of me registers how cute she is. Because I haven't heard of a ball going over in months. I didn't think you'd find one, Piper says. Thanks a lot, I snort. You could have told me that. You know I've been looking. I'm your babysitter now, too. Pocket, Natalie says, picking wildly at her shoulder. Pocket? Piper asks me. Usually I don't like when people talk to Natalie through me. I'm not a ventriloquist, and Natalie isn't my dummy. But today, I want her mute. She doesn't mean anything by that, I lie. Yellow buttons, Natalie says, taking 2 buttons out of her pocket. Natalie's upset. We need to go inside. I try to edge Piper out of the way, but Piper isn't budging. Stop, Natalie. You have to tell me. Piper recrosses her arms in front of her chest. She's pulling rank. Only Natalie couldn't care less whose daughter Piper is. 105, Natalie says. 105 buttons? Piper squints. She looks at Natalie, then me, then Natalie again. A big, slow smile pours across her face. Oh, sweet Jesus, you don't mean... I twist the knob and try to knee open our door. You got a con to give you a ball, didn't you? How did you do that? And who the heck is AZ-105? Somebody on the dock? I have to know! I have the door open and I'm trying to pull Natalie inside while keeping Piper out. Was it a waiter at the officers' club? Was it? Natalie, come on! Wow, Moose, I never thought you'd do something like this. She smiles big. My insides boil up and I barely restrain myself from slugging her. I push Natalie inside our apartment, then I try to get past Piper. What did you give him for the ball? Piper asks. I've got my shoulders in and I'm trying to close the door now. If only I can get Piper's fingers out of there. Come on, you must have given him something, Piper asks. Move your hand and shut up, I cry. This is amazing, Piper says, her eyes glowing. I've never seen her so excited. Think maybe he could get autographs too, Moose? Because Al Capone's signature, that is worth a fortune. This is the beginning, Moose. No, this is the end. I shut the door in her face. 28. Tall for her age. Same day, Wednesday, April 24th, 1935. The thing to do is come clean. Talk to my mom, talk to my dad, tell them. They'll understand. It was an accident. 3 minutes, 5 at the most. My mom said to treat Nat like a regular sister. Well, I certainly would leave a regular sister for 5 minutes. My mom can't be mad. Together we'll work out the right thing to do so this will never happen again. I can hear my mom's footsteps on the landing. She bursts in the door.
Look, Moose!
She waves a newspaper in the air. She slaps it on the table.
See? Didn't I tell you what a wonderful program they have? It's world famous. Look, it says right here.
New Hope for Kids with Mental Deficiencies, the headline reads. There is a picture of Mr. Purdy standing in front of the Esther P. Marinoff and a small close-up of a boy. Tom, age 10, was mute when he came to the Esther B. Marinoff, but now he speaks in simple sentences and reads at a third-grade level. The caption reads. The article is filled with quotes from experts. The program is quite extraordinary. It's modeled after a school in Switzerland run by the behaviorist Emil Binder. I skim down to see what Mr. Purdy has to say. Entrance in the school is highly selective. We have a small number of spaces for kids who are truly ready for the kind of opportunities we offer. Children start at the Esther P. Marinoff when they are 7 to 12 years of age and typically graduate at 18, Mr. Purdy says. How old does Mr. Purdy think Natalie is? Does he really believe she's 10? My mom has taken off her green hat and her green coat, and she has begun to make supper. Every minute or so, she comes back to the table to read a part of the article again. It's as if the newsprint is warm and my mother's hands are very cold. Natalie is on the living room floor, reading my math book like it's the newspaper. Mom, I need to talk to you, I say.
Okay, honey, she smiles. I can't wait to tell your dad about this. And do you know what else?
My mom claps her hands.
Mrs. Kelly says Natalie is really improving. She's going to write her a flying color recommendation. That's what she said. Flying colors.
My mom hugs me. She's so happy. She would hug the salt shaker if it were only taller.
Your sister is going to be okay. She's going to be fine.
But Mom, I say, it says no kids are accepted after the age of 12. My mother freezes. She's so still it looks like she stopped breathing.
Natalie is 10, Moose. You know that.
Her voice has a catch in it. You can't be 10 for 5 years in a row, I whisper.
Moose!
My mother cries. Her eyes are like teeth tearing into me. I remember that funny look Mr. Purdy had on his face when he asked if Natalie was 10. All I see in my head is Natalie holding hands with a grown man. I can't stand this anymore, Mom, I say.
She's tall for her age. What's got into you?
I look down at the article. I need to talk to you.
Fine, we'll talk tonight. Your dad will be home any minute. Didn't I already say that?
She slams down a square pan. It makes a tinny sound against the counter. Now I wish I hadn't said anything at all to my mom. I should have just talked to my dad about this. When my father walks in the door, my mother rushes to meet him.
Cam, look!
She hands New Hope for Kids with Mental Deficiencies to my father. This is a red-letter day, my father agrees. He takes my mom in his arms and does a little jig in the kitchen. I can't stand to watch this. I head for my room. Hey, Moose, my father says later that night when Natalie is in bed. Mom says you want to talk to us. Yeah, I say, my heart beating loud and guilty in my chest. I close my book, wishing they had forgotten. I don't think it's safe for Nat to follow me around, I say. My mother stares at me like she can't believe what I've just said.
But Moose, she's doing so well. Carrie Kelly thinks we shouldn't change one thing because being out with you kids and working one-on-one with her is the best possible...
Something happened. I feel nothing when I say this, like my mouth is talking all by itself. They wait. What happened? My dad asks. He touches my arm gently. My mind is scrambling. How can I tell them without really telling them?
I don't think it's safe for her on this island. She doesn't understand stuff. It's dangerous.
What happened? My father asks again. A con noticed her today, I say. My words feel like they are weighted down with stones. My father sighs and sticks a toothpick in his mouth.
Well, I can't say I'm surprised, Moose, but I understand how upsetting that would be.
My mother glares at him. A con whistled at her? Is that it? She's a pretty little girl, your sister. I wish I had a penny for every time some guy whistled at me. Let's not lose sight of what's important here.
Honey, wait. My father takes her arm again.
No, you wait. Natalie is getting better. Do you know what she said yesterday? She said, you made me sad. Do you think I like making her sad? I don't. But she's never said anything like that before. What is 55,031 times 59,032? Does May 16th fall on a Wednesday in 1914? This she said, but never you. Not mommy, you, a pronoun. I've been trying to get Natalie to use pronouns her whole life. And feelings. She said something she felt. Natalie is communicating with us. This is so important. There's no way she'll be turned down at the Esther P. Marinoff now.
It's dangerous, Mom.
Dangerous? Nothing on this island is half as dangerous as having her locked in her own world. Not one half, not one fourth, not one tenth as dangerous as that. So I am not, do you two hear me? Not going to change one single thing about Natalie's day. Things are going too well. And Moose, I won't have you sulking inside with her all afternoon.
This smarts. I can't believe she said this.
I've been taking her with me everywhere. I haven't been sulking.
No, of course not. My father's hand cups my neck. You've been a major reason why Natalie is doing so well, and your mother and I understand that. My mother glares at my father. She's really angry now. But I am too. No matter how hard I work, it's never enough. She walks out of the room, then back in.
The entrance interviews for the Esther P. Marinoff are only 4 weeks away. We're so close. I don't want anything to go wrong.
Her voice cracks. Calm down, honey. Nothing's going to go wrong, my father says. It's not. Moose, he turns to me. Thanks for bringing this to our attention, but I need to talk to your mom for a minute alone.
29. Convict Choir Boy. Wednesday, May 1st, 1935. The next week, I do my best to stay away from Piper, but the more I steer clear, the more she seems to want to be around me. She's planning something. Watch yourself, Annie tells me on Monday. On Wednesday, I find out Piper has given Scout 105's baseball, and then she's stopped talking to Scout. I guess she doesn't need him anymore. And Scout doesn't seem to care, which surprises me even more. You can have her, Moose, he tells me while we're warming up for our lunch game. She's more trouble than she's worth.
Oh, great, I say. Gee, thanks.
I think she's googly-eyed for you anyway, he says.
No, she isn't, I tell him.
Scout nods his head. You like her too, and you know it.
I don't know what you're talking about, I tell him.
It isn't possible to like someone I dislike as much as Piper. It didn't used to be possible anyway. So, Moose, we're friends, right?
Piper corners me as I come out of the bathroom right after the last bell at school. Whatever you say, Piper.
I pick up my books and head out the door into the bright sunshine. And friends help each other, right?
I don't like the sound of this.
I need your help.
She touches my hand. I close my eyes, blow air out of my mouth, and walk faster.
She keeps pace with me. I want your help with 105. You have an in now. Natalie does, anyway. You are unbelievable, I spit the words out at her. Moose, wait! Come on!
I don't want to talk to you, Piper. I just don't.
I keep walking fast, my head down.
This is going to help you too, because otherwise you'll always wonder. You'll never know what happened between Natalie and 105.
I know what happened. I was there, I lie.
No, you weren't, she says.
Go cram your head in the crapper, Piper, I yell in her face and cross the street to get away from her. How does she know everything?
Look, she wheedles, keeping pace with me. You've been driving yourself nuts with this, haven't you, Moose? But we can fix that. We'll let Natalie go to meet 105, and then we'll spy on them. Then you'll know. And if 105 tries anything, you can pound him, right, Moose? Won't that feel good?
As far as I'm concerned, 105 does not exist.
We came so close to getting into the cell house with Mrs. Capone, Piper says.
No, we didn't, I say.
What if they'd used Jimmy or Teresa to translate instead of Mrs. Madiman? And then they'd need to take them up to the cell house because cons can't talk to visitors in a foreign language.
What if, what if, what if? None of that even came close to happening.
Didn't you learn anything? Just be there. Just be close and it will happen. You can't catch a ball unless you're in the ballpark. Take 105, for example. She tries again.
I don't know what you're talking about, I shout, stopping in the middle of the sidewalk.
Natalie certainly does. That's all she talks about, is 105.
I glare at her. How would you know?
I heard her one day when she was with your mom. Your mom had no idea what she was talking about. But I knew, Piper says.
My neck gets stiff. I can hardly move it. She loves numbers is all. That's always what she talks about.
I start walking again.
Oh, yeah, right.
Look, what's the harm of just talking to the guy, 105?
No harm. Go ahead. You don't need me and you don't need Natalie.
Ah!
She makes a disgusted noise and cuts in front of me.
Well, you don't.
I sidestep her. She cuts me off again.
There's an odd expression on her face, both eyes looking left, not at anything in particular.
What? I ask.
She scratches her back.
Well,
she sighs.
Well, what?
I tried to talk to 105, but he wouldn't talk to me.
No kidding. You know, you really charmed me.